fellow baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to episode 16 of the Johnny and Josh Show. Well, in terms of numerology, number 16 resonates with wisdom, independence, and family. Now, I can't vouch for the wisdom, but I know I've got the family. I've got my baseball brothers with me, JC and Big Dave. How are we, boys? Hey.
What's up, Goldie? I like 16. Doing? I like 16. You know why?
Sweet pitcher, 16.
Pitcher's number, sweet 16. Yeah, no quinceañeras. It was a pitcher's number, right? Three Hall of Famers with number 16.
Correct.
Al Newhouser.
Correct.
Ted Lyons.
Correct.
Whitey Ford.
Correct.
And somebody who could have been and should have been a Hall of Famer, if things didn't go terribly wrong, number 16 for the Mets, Dwight Gooden, who won 197 games as a mess. Imagine if he had managed to stay drug-free. I would say he would have been a shoo-in for the Hall of Fame.
Kind of wonder why it's a pitcher's number. Like, why do pitchers like 16?
No idea. Well, of course, we don't have many single pitchers numbers. We know that. But
we've had some number zeros you have, right, recently?
Well, yes. Billy Hamilton, who made a great catch this week, wears number zero.
This is an interesting point, JC. Can I pick up on it? I mean, in football, obviously, if you're in a squad, you know, if you're playing center forward, you want number 9 or you want number 10 because certain numbers relate to certain position. Now, obviously, when you're scoring, you know, 6 is your shortstop. And therefore, is that does that have an impact on numbers that players choose?
Well, when numbers were originated, it was because of the position in the batting order.
Correct.
So one would bat first, 2 would bat second,
right.
3. That's why Babe Ruth was the number that he was at. But over the years, you know, people have just come to love numbers based on players who previously had that particular number. But I think like 9 and 8 are, you know, the really popular number. 8 was a big catcher's number, right? You had Yogi Berra, but also you had Kari Stremski, so outfielder too. But the one number that I think is most iconic is 44 for me.
For what reason?
Hank Aaron
and
Reggie Jackson at the height of his career. Okay. I just think it's a sexy number.
More than
very
40,
sexy.
More than 42.
Well, I mean, 42 is not sexy. It's sanctified. I mean,
it's iconic.
Holy.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I agree with David.
But I just want to focus on Whitey Ford before we do move on, because of the three that you mentioned that are all in the Hall of Fame. The chairman of the board. I mean, what a career! 16-year MLB career, lifetime Yankee, 10-time All-Star, 6 World Series champion. That's an amazing stat.
I think what adds to
time,
it,
World Series
time. But more than that, he did that all while partying like a rock star. I wrote an article that's going to come out in a few weeks, an academic article on a concept called the lump. I made up the term. It's a lump. It's lamentably unproductive mound performance. And that's an instance where a pitcher goes into a game, either as a starter or reliever, and does not get a single out. And Whitey Ford had that happen one time in his career. The next day, a gossip columnist wrote about how he and Mantle were going out and partying too much.
Ooh.
So you know, the dude could party, but he could then rally. He was a rally guy.
And we learned a little bit about CC Sabathia this week and how he drank on his off days and then took a few days off and then he pitched and very successfully. I guess there's something in the pinstripes.
But there's that's those colorful stories abound. I mean, Doc Ellis is the best of those stories,
of course,
right?
Yes.
When he threw a no-hitter on LSD. But if you listen to his oral history about that, like that guy was partying for like 2 days leading up to that game too.
If we want to compare sports, boys, I mean, rugby just knocks the socks off any other sport when it comes to the ability to party and still perform.
I disagree, Goldie. If you go to the 1950s baseball, I mean, those guys hit it hard. They hit it all night. I mean, the stories of Mickey Mantle are legion, right? About the hangovers and drunk on the field and all that.
What about Australian wicketkeeper? Is it Hughes who drank all those beers on the flight?
Correct. Merv Hughes set the all-time can record. Yeah, something ridiculous on the flight over for the Ashes.
So there's plenty of piss heads in baseball and rugby and all sports.
We would have such a waffle if Eric were here right now.
Yeah, no, we would.
He would be full.
Guy, the reason I love Whitey Ford is because in 1961, you will know the year of my birth, he won both the Cy Young Award and the World Series Most Valuable Player Award. So he was the man in the year of my birth that was 1961. Now, it's been proved to be very popular, my biblical reference to the number of episodes. So we can't move on without a reference to that. It is symbolic. You'll be very happy to know, boys, of love and loving. And this one's for you, Dave. In the Old Testament, 16 of the various names and titles for God specially signify his constant, never-ending love for the children of Israel. That's one for you.
Oh, that's so
in fact,
true.
That one's for you,
Josh, too.
And for Josh. Why am I excluding you, JC?
Does everybody forget that Josh is Jewish?
Because I don't embrace religion, but that's a whole other podcast.
Well, there's culture and religion, Josh.
Oh,
we don't have to
Lord.
Go into that.
Okay, now the waffle is coming out. Right, yeah. Okay. COVID update, there is none. Although Korea is who's on my fantasy team, is on the COVID IL. So there is still bits and bobs. A Twitter update. You're going to love this, guys. We're up to 2,074 followers for the Johnny and Josh show. And we will be announcing the competition winner at the end of the show.
Ooh,
stay tuned.
I am so excited.
Great teaser, Goldie. That
Thank
keeps
you.
People waiting till the end, right?
Thank you. Get teasing down there. So plinkety plonk, hit the piano. That is means subscribe, bottom of the screen, like. Get involved, be part of the family. Right, let's move it on. And it's trivia. Time to set up the trivia question, and gives me great pleasure to tell you all that our trivia legend this week is none other than Mr. David Langell.
Okay, here's a great question for everybody. I love this question. Name the only pitcher.
No, hold on. What? You're not, you can't, it's got to be a multiple choice.
That's I'm going to give you multiple choice.
Okay.
How could you? You're preempting me.
You said name the only pitcher. It requires
okay.
A, which
That's
of
how I usually
pitchers?
Ask it.
Right. The way you would phrase it is
okay,
which of these
okay.
pitchers?
Okay. Choose the only pitcher to
From
win a
list.
World Series game in 3 decades.
Ooh.
And our options are.
And your options are Bob Gibson. And by Bob Gibson, I don't mean the right-hander who pitched for the Milwaukee Brewers and the Mets from 1983 to 1987. I mean, the Cardinals pitcher, Bob Gibson.
Thank you for the clarity.
You're welcome. Jim Palmer, who pitched for the Orioles. Roger Clemens, who pitched for several teams. And somebody who we've already heard on his name on this podcast a lot for a very short period of time, Whitey Ford, the chairman of the board.
So the question
let's
again,
recap.
How many decades?
3 decades.
You have to have won a World Series game in 3 decades, 3 separate decades.
Okay.
And your choices are Roger Clemens, Jim Palmer, Whitey Ford, and Bob Gibson, the Cardinals Bob Gibson, not the Brewers Bob Gibson. Just okay. So we're clear. Okay, we'll have the answer a little bit later on.
Okay, thank you for that, Dave. We
I
move
did it
on.
In kind of an Eric voice. Did anybody notice?
Where no. You weren't stumbling.
You didn't say
you didn't say
a boot and you know off it.
Who's the greatest pitcher, eh?
Have you noticed how much love we showed Eric in the early ones when we lost him to Wimbledon and the Olympics
and now we just crush him.
Don't
leave us.
Because we figured out he's not listening. We thought if you would listen.
If you leave us, we'll crush you.
Uh-oh. I'm gone next week.
Josh, it's all
adios.
Yeah, can I point out, if we lose Josh next week, so if you're not available, Dave, it's me on my own crushing all three of you.
That'll be great.
Well, I
would listen to that.
You love the sound of your voice. It would be awesome.
It's Johnny Gould for 1 hour.
Right.
Solo.
Would you set yourself up? Would you say, Johnny, what do you think of this? Well, Johnny, I think.
I'd do a Ricky Henderson. Yeah.
Yeah.
Johnny loves Ohtani.
Oh, I like it.
Right, great moving one. On. Ding, ding, ding. Ding it's ding. Time, given that we are on top of the All-Star break, it's first batter up, and here is the news roundup. That was a pause for a sound effect. That was not a pause for somebody to
well,
come
I,
in.
I know, because I thought we had to do Akil Badu. Is he later?
No, he's at the end of the news roundup.
Okay, well, you know, I get excited about Akil Badu.
Well, as you can see, we are so desperately short of a producer. It's all going completely tits up.
All gone, Pete Tong.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, we're going to move on. In the news roundup, we've got Slam Diego to start us off, boys. And I'm sure you saw this week. The Padres are relief pitcher Daniel Camarena enters the MLB history books. Very improbable. He hits a grand slam. It's his first ever hit in only his second career plate appearance. But this is the bit that I love. This is a relief pitcher, guys. And he hits it off the superstar that is Max Scherzer. And I don't know if you've seen the footage. It was on Thursday night via the Nationals, obviously. Bases loaded. I mean, it was not a bad pitch. It was around the ankles. And he somehow dug it out, hits a monster. His family go crazy. The footage has gone viral. It's a phenomenal story.
I'll tell you what I love about that story, Goldie, which is that you think of baseball, everything has happened at this point, right? Every possible permutation of hit, pitch, fielding situation has happened.
You would think so.
And then all of a sudden, something new. Guys,
something new.
Grand slam, first hit in his career. I mean, crazy.
And he's a reliever.
Yeah.
Well, unbelievable.
Guys,
he's just some schmuck. What's he even doing hitting?
He's actually the second pitcher in MLB history whose first hit was a grand slam. Any ideas who the first was?
No, who's the first one?
Well, you won't remember. 1898, neither of you were around. Bill Dugleby did it for the Phillies on April the 21st, 1898.
Yeah, but first time in the modern era.
That was
a different baseball game back in 1898.
Can we just say that this record is going to be safe and secure if the DH comes into Major League Baseball next year? Because a reliever will never get that odd swing of the bat.
Well, it's possible, though, right?
I mean,
you lose your DH.
It would be wild for that to happen.
Yeah. Okay, well, guys, you clearly didn't.
Not with Ohtani.
Yes, there is one player, in the entire league who's capable of that. If he becomes a reliever,
it is abundantly clear neither of you like that stat. So I'm going to throw a few more at you.
I love that stat.
He was the first relief pitcher to hit a grand slam since Don Robinson, who did it for the Pirates back in 1985.
Don Robinson was a good hitter.
I remember Don Robinson.
I remember. He wore the Pillbox hat well.
But here is where he really makes history. He's the first Padres player to have a grand slam for his first hit. Can you believe that? First Padres player ever.
They only just got a no-hitter. So that doesn't surprise me.
Oh, so you don't even like that stat. I'm throwing out records, Johnny.
Get some new stats.
You say we take too long, and then you just throw seven stats our way.
Let me give you another stat.
Pick your favorite and move on.
I've run out of stats, and you didn't like any of them. Okay, we're moving on then. MLB draft happens on Sunday, finishes on Tuesday. This is what I've read. In an effort to better market the event, MLB has pushed the draft back to the All-Star break. Because it normally takes place about June, doesn't it? Last year's draft was shortened to 5 rounds from 40. That just to cut costs because of COVID. This year's draft is going to be 20 rounds. And, of course, thanks to their 1941 record from the shortened 60-game season of last year, the Pirates hold the number one pick, which they've done 5 times before. You will remember 2011. Who did they get in 2011 as their number one pick?
Gerrit Cole.
Well done, Big Dave. Takes the
draft. Wow.
They've had some bad ones too. I mean,
I can't believe I knew that. Races.
Well, their other ones were Jeff King, Chris Benson, Brian Bullington.
Oh, Chris Benson. Bullington. There's some good stuff with Chris Benson and his wife. Remember
huge,
that?
Yep. Remember that. Huge mess. Bullington was a disappointment.
Huge mess.
Yeah.
So what is the significance, JC, of the MLB draft and in particular the changes that are sort of creeping into, in terms of the number of rounds, etc.? And do you think that their efforts to make this more relevant is working?
Yeah, there are a lot of elements to unpack about the draft. And the move is, as you pointed out, clearly a marketing effort and one that I had hoped for years that they could figure out a way in to make this more compelling. But I'm starting to come to the conclusion that it's nearly impossible.
Yeah, I could have saved you a couple of years there, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, I thought there might be ways to make it exciting. The obvious reason for that is the same reason the NHL draft typically is not one that we pay a tremendous amount of attention to, because you don't get immediate impact players. I mean, I can tell you who the number one pick overall was last year. You guys know?
No.
Spencer Torkelson, who was a ASU player. He's playing at AA right now. He's going to be in the futures game, but no one knows it, right? Because it just doesn't matter. So what they always have to lean into, and I think that this draft actually offers some good opportunities, are the lineage players. So you have two guys who are going to be relative top picks in Jack Leiter from Vanderbilt. His dad is Al Leiter, the great pitcher. And then Kumar Rocker, who also pitched at Vanderbilt. His dad was Terry Rocker, who was an NFL player. But I will give
His dad was not John Rocker.
No, certainly not. I will tell you the story that will blow your mind, though, for both of you to say how old we are. Eligible in this year's draft is a senior. So he was eligible last year, didn't get drafted, but had a good season at Cal Berkeley, was a player by the name of Darren Baker. That is Dusty Baker's son, who was the kid who ran onto the field in the 2002 World Series to pull the bat and had to be yanked off the field. We were doing that game.
I remember that.
I was at that game.
Yeah, so we are old as sin because that guy is now draft eligible yet again. He was actually drafted out of high school, wasn't drafted as a junior.
That's incredible. No wonder I get up and go to the bathroom 5 times a night.
Yeah.
That is such a great memory. I do remember that very clearly. I mean, it was
So Major League Baseball is going to have to lean into those sort of stories. Marcel Lemaire is likely the number one pick. He'll either be one or two. He's your typical type of pick for that 6'3 shortstop, great athlete. But again, he's coming straight out of high school out of California. So
where does Jack Leiter go?
Jack Leiter's a top five, top six pick. So is Kumar Rocker.
I thought I had heard he had slipped a little bit. Kumar.
I heard, I mean, I was hearing the Red Sox were considering him. And I think they have actually a slightly higher pick than anticipated. So.
Okay, great stuff, boys. Let's move on. Our next story, robots, not perfect. I'm referring, of course, to the institution of an automated strike zone. I think we all think it's probably an inevitability at this point for MLB, especially since they're experimenting with a system in the minor leagues and partner leagues. But former MLB player this week, Jordan Pacheco, currently playing for the Lexington Legends of the Atlantic League, triggered a new debate. When basically got video footage that does suggest the robot got it wrong.
Oh, 100% got it wrong. I watched that. That was absurd.
Ugly.
So yeah. So how? I don't understand. If it's science, it's robotic, how can it get it wrong? It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, maybe they didn't calibrate the cameras correctly. I have no idea, but that's makes, you know.
Is that a reason to think this is going to be an experiment that will fail or should fail?
No, I mean, just like anything else, the kinks are being, like a player, the kinks are being worked out in the minors. First of all, I don't like it. I prefer to have the human element in the game, even for balls and strikes. It's just something I don't mind. I don't mind a horrific call every now and then because it's just kind of part of the game. And I'm okay with that, with balls and strikes. With, you know, hits down the line and home runs, I think we should take a look at those. But Pacheco, if you listen to him, he says, I didn't have enough time to tweet the times that's happened to me this year. And the big issue is, should the home plate umpire have the power to overrule? I mean, if there's something so obvious, shouldn't he stand behind there and reverse the call?
Good point. Yeah,
I think you're right, David. He was there. And the funny part was Pacheco is talking to the umpire who's, you know, being told in his ear whether it's a ball or a strike. He can't do anything about it.
I mean, that's absurd.
Power. I agree with that. If it's
Bregman was Bregman and I think Josh Donaldson, who's a big proponent of this, right? Am I right about that? Josh Donaldson, he wants computers. He wanted to see the overhead because, you know, he wasn't trusting that. It was a slightly off angle center field camera, so he wasn't trusting that, but it was clearly.
I mean, it looked really far off. Now, maybe the catcher was set up a little inside because it was away, and he is correct. If you have the camera angle a little off, there's the potential for it to appear, but I think that was looked like a ball to me.
Okay, well, this is the sign off of this story that I like. Pacheco apparently immediately doubles over in disbelief when the call was made, and starts to argue with the umpire, and then leading to the stadium announcer playing "Let It Go" from Disney's Frozen.
That's a bad way to go out. And also, the play by play guy was about 30 seconds after calling it a ball. He didn't realize what had happened, and then all of a sudden he had to make the pivot to strike three.
Yeah. Okay. Right, let's move it on. Astros declining All-Star game starting slots. We're talking Altuve, we're talking Correa. The official reason given, and this is the one that you quoted to me, Josh, is that they want to rest properly during the All-Star break ahead of the big drive towards a championship in the second half of the season. Do you accept that? Is there a reason? Because my immediate instinct is they just didn't want to be in a stadium where potentially, as Astros trash can gate, they may get booed.
I mean, you look at Otani, who's going to come, may pitch, may play the field. He's going to do the home run derby. And it's just sad that there are players who aren't going to step up for this. This is always meant to be the shop window exhibition game for this sport, where you get all the stars and you try and build up momentum and energy for the fan base. And when you're putting your team first, I'm not feeling it. I honestly feel like all these guys are entertainers first and foremost. They get paid a lot of money to do things for the fans. And I know there's a lot going on. I've been to the All-Star weekend many times. I've been as a player's representative. I've been as a broadcaster. It's busy, but come on, man. I mean, seriously.
Jacob DeGrom? He's not going.
Well, if you're injured and it's legitimate, you know, you Darvish.
He could go and sit there because he's the best pitcher in baseball and he's still an attraction.
No, I mean, maybe.
Interesting. Yeah, very interesting. But JC, the thing about the All-Star game, I'm going to play devil's advocate here, is they have literally in every series away from home, been given some stick, and understandably. And I imagine that's pretty wearing for Astros players, when they've got to suck it up. They did wrong. They know that. I agree with all of that. But the thing about the All-Star game is they actually get announced one by one. And if that, if a significant proportion of the Colorado Stadium fans start booing, that'd be a pretty horrific experience when it's meant to be about the positivity of baseball.
I mean, so, suck it up, though, Goldie.
No, boos are part of that. That happens in All-Star games.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. And I mean, I don't know which is more cynical, that they wouldn't go because they didn't want to get booed, which I think would even be softer than saying, I want to take a break so I can mentally reset for the second half.
Yeah.
But whichever is the case, again, I if people are going to start doing this more and more, what's the point of the All-Star game? All of a sudden you're like, it's irrelevant when you're starting to get to third tier people. And I get injury makes sense. But if people are just saying it's not worth my time, then it takes so much luster out of the weekend that you ask yourself, is it even relevant as a spectacle?
And actually, just to conclude this, guys, whenever we refer to, when we did at the top of the show, Whitey Ford, a 16 or 10 time All-Star, will they be referred to as this, as them, because they were invited? I assume because they declined, it won't be on their record. They can't add this in now as part of their stats.
No, they're still All-Star. I mean, if you're elected an All-Star, you're an All-Star. You get that little star in baseball.
So they're getting the benefit without actually, as you say, sucking it up. So that's a
bit. Look, all this stuff that you like, you don't like, this has to be negotiated with the union. And if Major League Baseball feels strongly enough that they have to make sure that their stars appear at the baseball All-Star game, then they're going to have to figure out a way to get that in the next collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah,
something tells me that won't be the hill they die on.
Right, because the list is so long. It's too long. Fighting on it's a mess. I mean, that speaks to that broader problem. But I do fear that if this becomes a trend, I mean, injury has always been an excuse to not go when people wanted a break. I say an excuse. I mean, you're right. Like DeGrom could go, but if you're just flat out now saying, you know what, I just don't want a deal because I want to focus on my team, it really takes a lot out of it.
Usually the All-Star break is when the Astros pour a lot of time and energy into research and development as to how to cheat for the next round of playoffs. So they're probably doing that.
Well, on a more positive note with the All-Star game, I'm really looking forward to the Home Run Derby, which, of course, takes place on Monday, particularly with the lineup. Shohei was the first. Otani was the first to sign up. But there's some other big, big names. I think he's in his first round. He's up against Juan Soto. It's going to be really exciting. Perhaps even more so, JC, because apparently they're not going to use the humidor for balls. So they should be flying. This could be a grand slam of a Home Run Derby.
Oh, yeah, big time. I mean, it's going to be really exciting. We've seen some great home run derbies. I know we were all at the old Yankee Stadium when Josh Hamilton put
that was the best one.
And that was at sea level, right?
Yeah.
You get up to the rarefied air of Colorado. I've played here, and I've hit balls when I was playing, near the end of my playing time just in leagues here, that I thought, that's a lazy fly ball, and it's hitting off the wall. I mean, the balls carry here, and particularly when you don't put them in the humidor to level it out, I think this could be really exciting. I hope that in the UK, they have the version of the Home Run Derby telecast that is StatCast with it, because to me, that's what's really fun, is to crunch the numbers on distances, on angles. I think it adds a lot to the excitement and the enjoyment of watching the Home Run Derby.
I think it's fair to say it surpassed the All-Star game in popularity.
Yeah.
Right. We can all agree that, which is a little bit sad. I mean, can we briefly address the uniform situation? They're not going to be wearing their colors of uniforms. I know we talked about that briefly, but now that it's actually going to happen, they haven't pulled it back. I thought maybe they would, they would come to grips and figure out that nobody wants to see those nasty uniforms that they created for the All-Star game. Everybody wants to see all the players next to each other in their own uniforms. And now we're going to have to sit through that. That's a mess.
I agree. I mean, that may be us being old, though, because I've seen some Twitter, action saying that they actually like it. I agree. I don't like the uniforms. And I thought one of the funnest parts of it was seeing all the different jerseys on the field.
Totally. It's very colorful. I like the colors.
You seem to be ignoring the obvious here, guys. The reason why.
Merch.
The reason, exactly. It's merch sales.
Who's buying that? I need to have a gross.
Hey, buddy, who's buying all four strips of Chelsea Football Club? Their away strip, their home strip, the European strip, they were off to play in the Isthmian League. I don't know. I mean, there are at least four different shirts. People are obviously buying them. They wouldn't be producing them. So, sadly, buddy, money talks. Money talks.
We're old. We don't get marketed to anymore. We're done.
Well, talking of marketing, this last story is one that that Dave brought to our attention.
It is a Dave story
because
you're gonna
because it's funny.
Understand? Yeah, because it's funny. Way. It's controversial and it allows you to go off. It's a Dave
story. I'm not going off on anything. I just want to know.
Hey, can I tell the story first, please?
Tell the story.
Okay. Dion Cini was recently barred from MLB venues after he dropped a Trump 1 banner at Yankee Stadium. This is back in May. He then went on and did it at a number of other stadiums as well. So they banned him. He has now come out and announced that his Trump merchandise business has prospered big time in the last month because having been banned himself, he then apparently made an offer to anybody that bought one of his Trump 1 banners that if they dropped one at a stadium and he had photographic proof they had, he would refund the full cost of the banner. And I think somebody did it in San Diego. So it got a lot of publicity. So, yeah, this is a story brought to our attention by none other than David Langell. David,
and where are those Trump 1 banners made? Any guesses?
China,
because if they were made in the U.S., he would have to charge $30 for a 3x5 flag, and you know who's going to buy a $30 3x5 flag? No, I think the interesting part of this is just you know the ability you know should people have a right to, you know, throw down banners in baseball stadiums? My thought is no, because it is a, you know, it's kind of, you don't want to censor people, but it is also kind of private property. And, you know, it's not really a place where you should be able to advertise at will. The one thing I would say is that Major League Baseball could learn a thing or two from this guy. Maybe they should have a flag that says Trump won, watch the MLB draft. Because so many people, he got so many eyeballs on this thing. Maybe MLB should be hiring him for their marketing.
It's funny that you say that because, I mean, fans bringing signs is such a staple part of it. I remember, and some with more serious overtones. John 3:16 was a popular
sign. Oh, my God. John 3:16.
You know, that they would put up. I don't even know what the religious reference is. Obviously, it's...
I never knew.
Yeah, but... You know, I think that the issue is, right, it's taking it away from what's going on the field. It's taking it away completely from the sport and the action. It's one thing if you're speaking toward what you're seeing. It's another thing where you're just trying to leverage or piggyback off of that to bring attention to yourself. And that's just dirty. Yeah.
You know, the Mets had something called Banner Day, which was a great day where fans were allowed on the field before the game with their own homemade banners. And that at some point went away, I think, in the early 1980s. And I think one of the reasons may have been is that the team was so bad that some of the banners started to become negative and ownership shied away from it. But the good news is Banner Day is set to return as a Mets staple this year. So that will be interesting to see what they come out with.
We're going to see Trump won.
Guys, I mean, the logical extension of what you're saying, Dave, about whether or not it should be allowed, it's private property, etc. Well, then the logical statement is that therefore players and teams cannot make political statements. Therefore, suddenly, Tommy Smith, John Carlos, 1968 Mexico City Olympics, what they did should be banned. No other player should do. I mean, the taking of the knee, these are all political statements. Therefore, you're in a very, very dangerous area. If you're starting to say to fans that they can't bring a banner, then you're basically saying to sportsmen and women that they can't have political views and they can't voice them.
I think there's a difference between self-aggrandizement and advertising and social statements, which are, of course, important.
Well, he's reaping the economic benefits because there's a huge demand. But at the end of the day, it wasn't about that initially. It was about making a statement because he's a massive Trump supporter.
I don't know. I tend to think it was probably more about money, but that's just me. Maybe I'm cynical.
Right. You do wonder if the message was different, but equally political, that there wouldn't be as much lashback. I mean, that's part of it, too.
Good point. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's a controversial, but one of those stories that I have to say, it just makes me laugh, quite frankly.
I mean, God, it's so funny. It makes you laugh. I mean, as someone living in the U.S., it makes me sad as sin.
Laugh in a way. I don't mean laugh as in an enjoyable, positive laugh, buddy. I mean laugh as in I can't believe that people are still going on about it. You know, at the end of the day, move on. You know, Joe Biden's the president and all power to his elbow. I mean, it just seems a nonsense. That sort of a laugh, buddy. It's a sort of,
Fair point.
Okay, guys. Well, great stuff. Really interesting conversation pieces. But we need to round up the news roundup. And of course, we always finish off with our traditional Badu watch, Akhil Badu, A View to Akhil. Our good friend Craig came up with that title. We very rarely use it, in fairness. We always go off on other ones. But there you go. Yeah, it's not been a great week for our friend Akhil. Just the four games he's had since we last were broadcasting. And he went 3 for 16, 2 runs scored. So he's not getting regular playing time. There is still an element of platoon about what he's doing, but he's still in the majors. And I suppose that's a bonus.
Can I make one point? Because we always give sort of the traditional stats. His WAR, his wins above replacement, is 1, which means that he is better than replacement average player. He is 1 full point better, which is, you know, reasonable. So, yeah, you know, you may have a batting average of X or Y, but if you get into the advanced analytics, the dude's earning his keep without a doubt.
Defensively?
I love you, Akhil.
Do you rate him defensively? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I presume that is a huge part of it. I mean, obviously his offensive numbers are not terrible, but I think he's a, you know, combined player.
And can we just give Badu and his team some props? You know, the Tigers were 8-19 in April, and in May and June, they were a game over 500, 14-13, and they're 4-4 in July. So they've been playing some very decent baseball. I would say that's above expectations.
I cannot believe, Dave, you didn't say, can we give Badu his due?
Oh, can we give Badu? Thank you. Thanks for the pickup. You're absolutely right.
Great stuff, guys. Okay, well, that's a great way to round up the news roundup. So we move on, second batter. And with your permission, guys, this is very much a call I made. This is a man I wanted to focus on. To me, he is the name, the man of the 2021 season. We've already referenced him once, Shohei Ohtani. I think it's brilliant that he came out so early and said, yeah, I'm going for the home run derby. He wants to be a part of the joy. And he hit his 33rd home run. I believe it was last night. We're recording on a Saturday, in the third inning for his Angels to give them the lead. Unfortunately, the Mariners rallied to win the game, but that's somewhat ironic. It had a projected 463 feet distance with an exit velocity of 116.5 miles per hour. The reason I mention that is the hardest hit homer at the ballpark by any player since StatCast was introduced in 2015. The man is a phenom.
I think what we forget when we discuss it, we always talk about his power and pitching. The dude's one of the fastest guys in the game, too. Yeah. I saw a great Tom Verducci article on him where he pointed out that he hits the ball harder than Juan Soto. He pitches faster than Yu Darvish. And he's faster on the base paths than Randy Arozarena. I mean, the guy is...
Arozarena.
He is all-rounder. And they had a great quote in that article, too. Verducci had a great quote from Babe Ruth from 1919, where he said, look, it's just too much to pitch and play the field. And Ruth didn't run the bases. The one question, and our friends over at Bat Flips and Nerves had a tweet this week that those guys are getting a little chippy on the Twitter.
Ooh.
Brian Kenny was talking on MLB Tonight show, one of those shows on the MLB network, and questioning whether it makes sense for him to continue playing both ways. From a fan perspective, 150% it makes sense. From a team perspective this year, 150% makes sense. I mean, the team's right around 500 and it's only because of Ohtani. Long-term though, I think it's a legitimate question. The Bat Flips and Nerds guys started dropping F-bombs about how dumb Brian Kenny was. And I don't think Kenny's presentation of his position was very strong. It wasn't one of his most articulate moments. But if you're looking over the course of a career, you know, obviously Ohtani's already had arm injuries. When you run the bases as hard as he does, there's a chance for injury. You know, I do think in terms of longevity, what he is doing has the potential to diminish the length of his career. It will be exciting. It will be beautiful. It is great for the game. I love it. But you have to recognize that as a possibility.
It's definitely a possibility, without question, because there's a lot of wear and tear there. And he's tearing different parts of his body because he's doing so many different things between his base running, his pitching, and his hitting. But honestly, the guy's making enough money. As a fan, I would prefer to see him flame out in a blaze of glory than to lose that dual two-way player status. Perhaps maybe even, you know, would it be better for his body if he was just kind of a middle reliever? That's a question for you, Josh, as far as wear and tear goes. If he was, you know, the occasional middle reliever that they could bring out twice a week, would that help him stay in the game longer? I don't know, but I just want to see it go as long as possible.
Yeah, I actually think that would be worse for him, right? Because you don't know when you're going to pitch. There's something about knowing every 5 days when you're going to pitch, which allows you to create a structure to make it more possible to do so. And Dave, don't get me wrong. I agree with you 100%. For the sport, it is amazing. This guy is not only leading the league in home runs, he's leading the league in bunt singles. I mean, that's just amazing. You know, we talk about, like, if that were just the element of his game, 30 home runs, 12 stolen bases, he would be amazing. Then you put in the pitching. He's had one bad outing, but other than that, the guy is...
I don't have a superlative that's strong enough to describe the job he's doing.
And I wish Major League Baseball could figure out how to market that even.
Well, that was what I was about to come out with. Now they have two players on the same team who should be marketed, you know, up the wazoo and become tent poles for Major League Baseball. And they have failed. And I think they need to give the job to that Trump guy because he knows how to do marketing. Shohei Ohtani should be on commercials and be in magazines, but he's nowhere.
100% guys. And I have to say, he celebrated his 27th birthday 5 days ago. He is born on the 5th of July. And, if you consider that he's only been around major leagues since 2018, and it is abundantly clear that, keeping him on the field is the biggest challenge. He had 104 games in 2018, 106 2019. That's just over two thirds of a full season, 44 games last season. And when you look at the numbers he's producing this season, he's already had 82 games this season. So this is the first year since he's joined the major leagues in 2018 where health hasn't been an issue. Right. And obviously, therefore, keeping him healthy is vital, not just for him, not just for the Angels, but for Major League Baseball. If appropriately, as you guys have already suggested, they use him as the poster boy, and they should be using him as the poster boy alongside Jazz Chisholm, Tatis Jr., Acuna Jr., the new faces of baseball. Sure. Get these guys out there.
I think what's so tragic about the beauty and majesty of his season this year is that the Angels are so blah. And it's because they don't have Trout. Rendon has been injured for most of the season, too. I mean, they're missing that.
They're hanging in there, though. They are hanging in there.
That's because of Ohtani. He is and Jared Walsh. And Jared Walsh has been excellent, too. Yeah. But, you think that if they were hitting on all cylinders, they would be such an appealing team. And that it's harder, when Ernie Banks was playing for the Cubs and the Cubs sucked, it was hard to market him to the degree that you'd want to. Being a great player on a winner, it helps that process.
One last thing, Josh, if he was an opener, so he knew when he was going to pitch and then he would only pitch one, maybe two innings, that might be helpful.
Perhaps.
Yeah, but yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It wouldn't be as sexy.
Okay. Here's a question to you both about the Angels. What can you say about the Angels that you can't say about all but the Mets in the National League East?
What does that mean?
Well, they have a record. Okay, they have a record that none of four of the five teams in the National League East have, despite the fact they're coming fourth in the AL West. They have an over 500 record. They're 506 at the moment, whereas four of the five in the NL East are sub 500. So yeah, they're not the greatest, but they're only 4.5 games back in Houston. Four and a half games back of Oakland, in the wild card chase, and nine back of Houston. So it isn't unattainable. Another thing to mention as well, as a record breaker, his 33 blasts are tied for the most by a foreign player before the All-Star break, matching Sammy Sosa, who had 33 before the break in 98. We all know that was all about steroids. The all-time record for homers before the All-Star break is Barry Bonds with 39 in 2001, also about steroids. So the true superstar.
He broke the season record for a Japanese player.
Correct. Hideki Matsui.
Half a season. And Hideki Matsui wrote just a really beautiful letter. I mean, there's just such respect. I love the Japanese game because people play with a level of respect. I mean, they have fun, but the tipping of the hat and what Matsui wrote about, I was considered a power hitter, but this is a real power hitter. It's just putting ego aside and understanding what we have here. That's
You talk about the respect in the Japanese game. That makes me wonder if there are any Japanese unwritten rules. I think we need to explore that one day.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you hit a batter, you tip your hat, right, to say that you didn't do it purposely. If you don't tip your hat, it means that you've done it purposely, and that leads to the bench clearing brawls. That's always been an issue.
There could be a few more.
Helps with clarity. okay, brilliant stuff. Just before we close this one out, MVP, as it stands, if you did the vote right now.
Come on.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, his pitching stats are not as sparkling after the outing the other day where he got lit up, but he's just baseball to me. I mean,
4-1, 3.49 ERA, 87 strikeouts, though, in 67 innings. But he's only had 13 starts. There's another issue. He's not having as many starts as you would.
That's not bad.
Yeah, that's not shabby.
You know, he's still on track to have 26. It's only like 5 or 6, 7 short. That's not bad.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, guys. We're going to round this one up. Let's move it on. Third batter of the show, and that is the big question. First half, it's not the first half. I mean, it's considered the first half because it's the All-Star break, but we know it's over halfway into the season. So my question to you guys, and let's focus on teams, is winners and losers, the surprises and the shocks. So I'll kick things off. Let's focus, first of all, on winners. Who's the biggest winner in the AL, considering where they are, whereas compared to where they were expected to be? Is it Boston or is it Houston?
I'd say Boston. I'd say Boston for sure. I mean, no one thought that they were going to have the pitching to compete, let alone depth of lineup, and they've shown that they have both. And I think, obviously it's a bit of a homer call, right? I've been a Red Sox supporter my whole life, but
homer.
But I think, for a team that's had expectations for so long, and there was such bitterness and acrimony after Mookie Betts was traded, but Verdugo's been solid, and the catcher they got in that deal just recently came up. I mean, it's not Mookie Betts, but they're getting value from that. It's a team that's solid. I think Astros, I think there was more of an expectation coming in.
There was more of an expectation, but I don't think anybody expected them to be probably statistically the best team in baseball right now. And without 100%. Verlander in that rotation, they've been sparkling. I mean, they've got a great rotation there. Not great, but extremely solid to go along with their offense, which,
Yeah, I mean, that's like saying you expected an 8 and you got a 9.5. The Red Sox, you expected a 5 and you got an 8.5. I mean,
I agree that the Sox are the story, but all I'm saying is I don't think that people expected Houston to be kind of the best team in baseball, which they look like right now, statistically.
I think Tampa Bay is a surprise too. I know that they went to the World Series last year, but I think every year people expect them to just fall down. And every year they show a way to be a very competitive ball club.
They have to prove themselves every year because of who they are. That's correct.
They're certainly resilient, lost 5 games on the bounce and then recovered by winning 5. After that, so their record for their last 10 games is 5-5 with a 5-game win streak. I think the stats back up what you're saying, though, Dave. 488 runs scored for Houston this season, which is the most in the whole of the major leagues, American League and National League. They've got a run differential of +136. That is monstrous compared to literally any other side. They are killing it. The team for me in the National League, there is only one choice when we're coming to winners. It's got to be the high-flying Giants of San Francisco. 632 win percentage in what was perceived to be, with the Dodgers and San Diego, one of the most competitive divisions. And yet they're doing it, and we're at the halfway mark.
Yeah, again, surprise pitching. Disclafini, I just probably pronounced his name wrong, Anthony.
Discotheque.
Anthony D, big fudge. Yeah, he has been fantastic. Gausman, who was the expectations when Gausman was with the Orioles for so long were so high. It's just so nice to see him living up to it. But to me, what is the most beautiful story there is Buster Posey, who is just such a great ambassador of the game for so long. People thought that, he was on the dive toward the end. And here he is showing a late career renaissance.
You want to know something, Josh? The numbers he's putting up this year are in line with his MVP season, and he's 34 years old. That's a great story.
34 years old as a catcher.
Yeah, which is like 92. 98.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Yeah.
Took the joke one step further. Thank you. You knew where I was going.
You've
got to
go all the way, Josh. Josh, you don't do things halfway. You got to go all the way.
Are you the sort of guy that goes to a comedy club in New York and you shout the punchline just after the guy's fed the line?
No. I know. I set it up and you just have to steal it. You have to take it.
I wanted to steal it. I have to take everything I can because I'm very desperate. Thank you.
I am. I cannot sing the San Francisco Giants praises more. And when you look at, and you're absolutely right, it's all about pitching. They've only conceded 320 runs, which I believe is the second best record in Major League, second only to Big Dave. Yeah.
Wait, hold on. You know who else deserves a lot of credit for the way they've played? I would say Evan Longoria. He hasn't put numbers up like this basically since 2012.
But I think what's been surprising, right, he was injured for a while. They've had injuries and yet been able to plug holes. That's usually the hard part for a team that isn't as talented.
Right.
That when they get some injuries, they just scuffle because they don't have the depth. But, you know, you get guys like Lamont Wade and you know, a number of other guys who aren't big name players who have
Darren
been able
Ruff.
Journeyman Darren Ruff was with Philly for all those years. You know, you got these guys who are coming in and doing a job, you know, being piece players.
Austin Slater, 9 home runs. Wilmer Flores, former New York Met, 9 home runs, having a very nice time out there in San Francisco.
Can I ask you one question before we move on to the losers? Yep. Will San Francisco be top of the NL West at the end of the season? Putting your head on the block.
I'm saying no. I mean, that's just the easier bet, right?
Yeah. Well,
the depth wins out over the course of 162 games.
Absolutely.
And the Dodgers don't have Seager right now, and Kershaw just went on the DL, and they're missing a couple of guys.
Well, Trevor
and
Bauer is out now too.
Bauer, they don't have their record. I think the Dodgers, if you look at the way they've played this year, they probably should have a better record than they have right now. And eventually, I think that they will rise above the Giants.
Well, I'll be the first one to cheer from the rooftops if the Giants can hold on for the whole season. That would be fab. Let's just focus now on losers, though, guys. We'll start in the American League. Is there a bigger loser than the Minnesota Twins? 37-50, 425. Everybody's saying, yeah, that AL Central. It's between the White Sox and the Twins. And they're not even in contention. 15 games back of the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, I mean, they've been so disappointing. The pitching's been shockingly bad. Maeda, who, you know, was expected.
I can't believe Maeda. You're so right.
Yeah. And I mean, offensively, and they've had injuries, right? Buxton is forever injured at some point or another. Kepler was injured. Sano seems to be, you know, on the downward trend now. So all these guys that were sort of cornerstone players have not lived up to even half of expectation.
And Alex Colome, who's supposed to be a very good pitcher for them, the closer, he's got an ERA close to 5. But they do have some good spare parts that some teams, I think, will like to pick off them.
They're going to sell. That's the thing. They're probably going to be worse in the second half, right? Because they're going to be sellers to whatever that they have for the spare parts.
Some very nice parts there. You got Nelson Cruz there. You got Simmons. You got Donaldson. Sano, when he puts the bat on the ball, actually, you know, has some pop.
Guys, when you go back, you know, to the last full season as well, I mean, they were hitting runs for fun. There are 6 teams in the American League with a better run score at this stage of the season. So it's not just the pitching that's been a letdown. They're hitting. Mitch Garver, of course, everybody getting excited about his potential as the catcher. I mean, it's just been a horror show.
And I think when you look at the two teams that people kind of think, well, there's 3 teams that people believe are able to consistently punch above their weight, that being Oakland, Minnesota, and the Rays. I think this just shows you how superior the Oakland and Tampa are to Minnesota, as they're able to do it so much more consistently. Minnesota has like a year here and there where they put it together, but what Oakland does and what Tampa Bay does is just extraordinary.
And we should add that Minnesota's ineptitude has really affected that central race in the sense that it's given another team to beat up on and allowed the White Sox just to be that much better, despite I threw the gauntlet in the ring.
Okay.
He did that on purpose.
Guys, we've got to wind this up, and we need to move into the National League. And I'm going to throw these two out as the biggest disappointments of the first half, and one of them obviously pains me. It's a sort of toss-up, isn't it, between St. Louis and Atlanta?
I'll throw in a third team just because they've been so inept. I don't think that people thought the Diamondbacks would be potentially a historically bad team. Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone said they're going to be at the top of the league. I think people certainly thought they'd be better than the Rockies in that division.
Yeah.
And they have just been, you know, it's been painful.
Here's another team I'll put out there for you. How about the Cubs? The Cubs, who have just collapsed and went from a team where, you know, people were just about to start taking seriously, and now they're a disaster. And now they're talking about selling off guys like Chris Bryant and their pieces. And it also makes you wonder, Theo Epstein goes away, Jed Hoyer can't put up the goods.
I honestly think that's panic mode, right? They're right around 500, the Cubs. I still think that they could be a player. They had a 10-game, that big losing streak, that 10-game plus losing streak. And, you know, I think that they could right the ship. But when they're starting to talk publicly about becoming sellers, your whole team, just the chemistry, the whole attitude says, we're done. And that's the biggest mistake.
Well, your argument, Josh, is that they did go 19-8 in May and look like world beaters. But if you look at the rest of the months, 11-15 in April, 12-16 in June, and 2-6 in July, we can see, you know, where Waldo is. And I think that they probably will wind up being sellers by the time it's all said and done.
Great stuff, guys. Thank you very much. We're going to bring that one to a close and focus on the seventh inning stretch. Right, JC, baseball book of the week. What have you got for me, big guy?
So we alluded to the fact that the collective bargaining agreement expires at the end of the season. There will be probably very tense negotiations between the Players Association, which is the union for Major League players, and Major League Baseball. And if you want to prepare yourself, girder yourself for what could be a very contentious offseason, there is one book and one book only that you should read. And it's A Whole Different Ballgame by Marvin Miller. Marvin Miller is the father of, I mean, along with people like Kurt Flood, is the father, at least off the field, of the union effort to organize Major League Baseball players at a time when they were very misused. This book is a fantastic read. I mean, it's a well-written. It really outlines what Major League Baseball players had to go through from the dawn of professional baseball and how they were treated as chattel. They were fungible goods for so long. And he talks about what it took to be able to turn the tide on that. Whether you can describe them in the same sort of manner that Marvin Miller dealt with, and Don Fear, who was a real pit bull, who was the head of the Players Association after that. You know, I don't know whether that's the issue. I think it's more level playing ground now. But reading this, it makes you understand when you say, oh, you know, players, they get to play a kid's game. It's so easy. And why do they ever complain? Read Marvin Miller's book, A Whole Different Ballgame, and really get a sense of the plight.
Fantastic. And I love the
so
fact
pleased
that
he got in the Hall of Fame. So pleased.
I'm particularly pleased that even when you are given the option to choose the baseball book of the week for our listeners, you still don't choose your own book. So
can I tell you, Goldie, that I hope that when I'm gone, you know, I'm away next week, that if there's a show, that maybe the love will be there. Then I don't feel like I'm talking about myself. I'm self-promoting.
We'll do our best. Right, baseball cultural reference. You're going to go with this one as well, JC. What have you got for us?
Yeah, so, you know, I was giving a lot of thought to this. We always do television. We do movies sometimes. We rarely do music. And I wanted to talk about a band that had dedicated itself, a supergroup, they're described as a supergroup, that dedicated itself to baseball music. And that's The Baseball Project. I don't know if either of you guys have ever listened to any of their music. They were founded primarily by two original members of REM, which is a very famous, you know, group of the 80s and 90s. And their music's quite good. And they were founded in 2007. In 2010, they did a thing where they wrote a song every month based on what was going on in the baseball season. And then they had free downloads for the song. And I had a buddy who worked with them for a number of years and gave me their CDs because I wasn't going to go out and buy, you know, songs about Satchel Paige. And the music's really good. So I recommend people go out, you know, maybe do a little taster of a few of the Baseball Project songs. They're still together. They still gig. It's worth it because it is the ultimate marrying of music and baseball. I mean, it's not necessarily my favorite baseball songs. We can go through, you know, whether you like Center Field, you know, various baseball songs. But in terms of quantity, that's where you're going to go.
Buddy, you're talking REM. Everybody Hurts, one of my all-time favorite tracks. It's almost like an anthem of my life.
Everybody, especially Johnny Gould, hurts.
And I think I'm going to hurt again in the trivia. Do you know, I don't think I've got the trivia right this season. I might have to check.
Not even once?
I cannot think of a single time, and we're on episode 16 of the season, so that is a pretty dire. Am I going to change my luck? Dave, put me out of my misery. Remind the listeners of the trivia question this week.
Yes, I will do that right now. And the question is, which of these players won a World Series game in three different decades? Is it Roger Clemens, Jim Palmer, Whitey Ford, or Bob Gibson?
Okay, well, I'm going to go with Whitey Ford just simply because I know that he had 16 seasons and one of them was 61, so that suggests to me that he did catch the 40s, 40s, 50s,
and 60s. And you just love this guy.
And I love this guy, and he won six World Series. So that's the only reason. That's the only logic to my Whitey Ford selection. JC, what are you going with?
Yeah, I don't think he was in the 40s or the 70s, Goldie, so I don't think you're right on that. And I don't think Gibson either spanned three decades. I'm pretty sure, but I have been wrong before. It's Jim Palmer.
Okay, the answer is not Roger Clemens, though I'm pretty sure he did pitch in. He pitched in the 86 yeah. World Series. He pitched, I believe, in the 99 World Series, and definitely in the 2000s he was in a World Series. And he was with the Astros, but not in 05. Whitey Ford is correct. He did not pitch in the 40s. He came into the league in 1950.
One year.
Bob Gibson also misses eligibility by 1 year. So the answer is Jim Palmer, who won a game in 66.
JC, if
won games, they beat the Pirates.
Dave, I don't want to know.
71 and 79.
I'm not interested in any of that.
And he went 1983. The Orioles won. Cal Ripken won his only World Series title in 1983.
He's like a dump truck going downhill, isn't he?
I have done pretty well in trivia this year. I've actually, it's been a pretty good trivia year. You know, a great story about Jim Palmer. You probably read this a number of years ago about Jim Palmer. He was adopted, and he wasn't ever really that interested. There were all these jokes that maybe he was somehow a Kennedy, that he was somehow wanted like a bastard child of the Kennedy. And he would always joke about that. Not his first wife, but one of his subsequent wives. I don't know if he had two or three, but she decided to make it a life's ambition to figure it out. And there was a great story in, I believe it was the Washington Post, talking about how they found his parents. They had deceased by the time they found him, but the story behind it was really gripping. I'll put it on our Facebook group.
I also believe that I'm 90% on this one, that Sandy Koufax's last at-bat came against Jim Palmer because he retired after the 1966 season, and the Orioles beat the Dodgers in 1966.
So here's the question for you, Dave, because Johnny probably won't know this. Okay. Who looks better?
Probably. Who, why are you even using that word?
Who looks better scantily clad? Is it
Joe
A,
Namath?
Or B, Joe Namath, right? Is it Palmer or Namath?
Namath is just a beautiful man, I would say.
I'm going with Palmer. Yeah. Palmer had that like that fake tan thing going, you know, work for him.
Okay, this is taking a very disturbing turn, this element. So let's move
Joe Namath had great legs. You have to see his legs.
Guys,
in that famous photo in Miami, when he's in Miami and Brent Musburger is there with his notebook.
Do you know, now I really do feel that I am Eric. I understand what Eric goes through, the pain and the suffering. It doesn't matter how much he shouts down, shut up, move on. You just ignore me. That's fine. I know my relevance. I'm going to mention the mailbag. Do get in touch. We're on Facebook at the Johnny and Josh Show and on Twitter at Johnny and Josh. That's an A-N-D. So do get in touch. And of course, very happy to report, guys, on Twitter, we're up to 2,074 followers. Ooh. Oh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah, baby. As you remember, a couple of episodes back, we did a competition to try and get up to 2,000. We're now at 2,074. Well, I spent an hour flashing through 2,074 followers on my phone and just stopping my finger. And if a finger stopped on one that was entertaining, I chose them as a winner. We got not one, but two. JC, you've promised to put a prize together. I'm going to put a prize together. And I'm very proud to announce that our winners are, here we go, guys, for the competition, for all our followers on Twitter. Number one is Cindy Grewal. and that is at Cinders25 is her Twitter handle. I love what she's written. Love all things QPR, Boston Red Sox, and the boss. And I have my dream job in a pretty fab place to work. Show a little faith. There's magic in the night. How about that as a message, guys? Fantastic. Show a little faith. There's magic in the night. Love that. Love that. And she's a QPR. She's a Mighty Hoops fan and a Boston Red Sox fan, which I knew you'd be happy about, JC. So Cindy is one of our winners. And our other winner is Dean Bremner. His Twitter handle is very original, at Dean Bremner. and I love this because what's he written under his name, guys? You know that on my Twitter handle, it's just said, totally unspoiled by failure. I like people that come out with something snappy and something entertaining.
Like I suck.
Yes, exactly. This is what Dean's written, guys. You're going to love this. 3 times winner of school sport sack race. There's Woo! A man after my own heart.
That's GOAT right there. That's greatest of all time. That's so good.
You know what's funny? I was talking about this the other day. GOAT. You just said the GOAT. It's funny how the GOAT is the greatest of all time and also the person who makes the biggest mistake.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Josh, yeah.
It's the circular world, right? Where the two ends come so close to each other.
It's exactly. Extraordinary, really.
Extreme right wing, extreme left wing. They're literally the same.
No, it's not political, Johnny.
Tell our winners, should they DM us on the Johnny and Josh?
Yeah, well, DM me at Johnny M. Gould, but I'm going to try and get in touch with him anyway via Twitter.
Your DMs are probably not open, Gouldy. You got to open your DMs so they can.
I've got to open my DMs.
His Twitter's broken. Somebody help him with his Twitter.
That's a technical requirement. So yeah, I may need some advice on that. Anyway,
my Google's broken.
If you're out there, Cindy Agreewal at Cinders25 or Dean Bremner at Dean Bremner, guys, you are the competition winners, and you have a goodie bag, a JG.
I can't wait to see or what's in a this thing.
Yeah, but what makes me laugh is one might be really good, and Josh's will be really good, and mine will be awful.
I'm going to give a book copy of my Baseball in Europe and a baseball card. That's what I did for the last one. Unless they really protest, and if they do, that's fine. I'll come.
Hey, buddy, don't worry. If I find out who Dean supports, I already know, obviously, that Cindy's a Boston fan. I think I've definitely got some Boston stuff. I will try and throw something Dean's way as well, just to beef out the JC. And obviously, you're posting yours from the U.S., so you're not going to be able to sell it.
Well, the book is an expensive book. It's more expensive. And you're giving stuff that you got for free in the first place, Goldie.
Yeah, you're giving away like old books.
I got sweat equity, buddy. I worked hard on those books.
For Johnny, it's just an excuse to clear out his closet.
Exactly.
That's what he wants to do.
Okay. He's got to get 3 competitions a week until he cleans his house.
Okay, yeah. That's your attitude. I'm sending 20 copies of my baseball articles that I've been writing during lockdown. There you go. I put blood, sweat, and tears into those.
That is honestly the saddest
thing I've ever heard.
Oh, your Here's book's not sad, but my articles are. Okay,
I've written our articles are, you know, that's for the goldfish. That's as much as you can concentrate on one thing.
Exactly.
To write about 700 words.
Hey, mate, this is 20 chapters of my book that will eventually come out, you know.
The memoirs.
Each one's a
Johnny
chapter.
Gould, the baseball story.
Okay.
Star.
How I cleaned my closet.
Quick mention of our other social media handles, guys. Fantasy Baseball, of course. Jimbo, James Holden, the legend of Fantasy Baseball, and my good self are on the Behind Home Plate. That is at BHP Pod. Do get in touch and join us. We normally come out. We've got a show coming out midweek, so you can check that out once you've had a chance to watch this show or listen to this show, I should say. Then, of course, we've got the Nat Coombs Show at the NC Show. Nat, of course, who is the head of the Ted Fred stable that we are a part of. And our huge thanks to him and the team for all their efforts. And young Marley, who's helping us out with the edit. What a superstar you are, Marley. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on YouTube. Clinkety plonk, get hitting the old like button, subscribe and join the family. Do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you, whether it be by Facebook or Twitter. Ask questions, whatever is your heart's desire. Guys, we've slightly overrun the 1 hour, but only by a matter of a minute or two.
Oh, my God.
So thank you. What are you up to, JC, next week that you can't be with us?
I am going to Italy.
Oh. Downtown Italy?
Downtown Italy, yes.
But, yeah, that's great.
Venice.
But are you going to be able to? Are you going to be able to cope with the depression of a Euro defeat in the final?
Thankfully, we are flying on Sunday because you know, Monday they may either still be partying or they'll be fast asleep from disappointment.
Yeah,
okay. I get in. We get in Monday.
Are you going to be watching, Dave? Because I know you're a big football fan.
I will definitely be watching. Fantastic. To see what happens.
And
go England, bring it home.
I'm loving that, JC. Dave, are we going to get a go England from you?
A go England. I'm not going to do something as pathetic as a go England, but I will be watching
And why is that pathetic? You just called me pathetic. Hey.
See what happens. Let's see what happens between Italy and England.
And fingers
in
crossed.
The big soccer championship game.
Well, I'm keeping my fingers crossed that you will be able to join me, Dave, next week. Otherwise, it's going to be the shortest Johnny and Josh show in the history of podcasts, as I'll be on my own talking, Todd. There you go. That's it from us. Eric, of course, still working the Wimbledon and the Olympics and very busy, but we're looking forward to having our baseball brother back in our midst. JC, have a great holiday with the family in Italy, and we look forward to having your company again. Dave, you're a legend. Fingers crossed. I'll see you next week, big guy.
Ciao.
Thank you to everyone for listening. This is the Johnny and Josh Show. We'll be back next week. Fingers crossed. Till then, take care.